Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John Couch. John, engineering and producing the program on the other side of the glass. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show as we get ready here, pretty much wrapping up the month of September, today being the 29th day of September 2020. We're bringing people together right here on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios on 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. That's also the place for all of our podcasts, the program available for you 24/7. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to our conversation with Jaime Molera. Mr. Molera, the former Superintendent of Public Instruction here in Arizona, and he is a spokesperson for those who are opposed to Proposition 208, which would hike the income tax on the most wealthy Arizonans and put that money back into public education. Jaime, how are you? It's good to reconnect with you, sir.
Bill, it's a pleasure to talk to you again.
How are things going? Why did you decide you just did not feel that Proposition 208 would be best for Arizona education?
Well, there's a couple of things. As you recall, Bill, I remember a long time ago when we talked about Prop 301, when that was the successful proposition when we passed the sales tax in Arizona. I was a part of that. I was the campaign manager for that. I worked for Governor Hull in helping to design it. The difference was is when we did that particular effort, we did it through the legislature, so we were able to craft it in the way that I think was a good bipartisan piece of legislation that was referred to the voters, but it also had a very strong business community input, right, that we knew that this would not be hurtful to Arizona's economic growth. This, on the other hand, does exactly that. It hurts Arizona's economic growth at a time when, because of this pandemic, we shouldn't be putting in place structures that will hamper Arizona to be able to come back and come back quickly. Creating a top marginal tax rate at this level, one of the highest in the country, it just doesn't make any sense.
So you're afraid that this is something that is the wrong time. Is the concept good, though, Jaime Molera?
No. In 2018, this was put forth, a different iteration of it, but it was basically the same. I also agreed to serve as the chairman of the effort. That was a no campaign. I don't believe that just adding dollars into a system where you have some great schools and you have some not so great schools and some really bad schools, and just hoping that something beautiful is going to grow with no accountability, with no understanding of where the money is really going to be going and targeted to. And there is no sense of, okay, if we're going to put in this case, they're purporting it to be $900 million. I think they're overestimating, but let's benefit the doubt. You're putting $900 million of new taxes. Particularly, half of those taxes are going to be paid for by Arizona small businesses, according to a couple of leading Arizona economists. And you're expecting, well, something good's going to happen. I've never seen that happen before in government, where you just say, okay, give us all this money, and we're not going to really tell you how effective it was, but trust us. I just think that's just bad policy, and it's not good for Arizona's economic engine.
What about the need, though, Jaime Molera?
Well, and I've said that before, and as you know, I've fought for things that make sense. Prop 301 was a great example of it. I supported the governor's effort to do a 20% pay raise for teachers by this year, which happened. I was very much involved in the initiative, Prop 123, that allowed for an additional $350 million of state trust land dollars to be advanced into the education system. And I think those are things, again, that were done in concert with business leaders, policymakers, education groups, and it came out to be a very strong and effective way that really targeted those dollars. This had absolutely zero business engagement, and if you look around the state, all of the business organizations that are lining up against this are pretty much every single major chamber, every single major business organization in the Pima County area. You have the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, the Southern Arizona Home Builders, the Tucson Metro Chamber. So it just shows you that businesses will tell you, look, we want Arizona to grow. We want to be a part of the solution. We want to invest more. but don't shove something down our throats that's going to kill our ability to grow.
What were your years when you were the school superintendent of Arizona?
Well, I've been fortunate. I've been involved in education policy in Arizona. As superintendent, particularly, was between 2001 and 2003. And then soon after that, a few years later, I was appointed by then-Governor Janet Napolitano to serve on the State Board of Education, and then again by Governor Jan Brewer. So I served 8 years on the State Board and 2 terms as the president of the State Board.
Have we made much progress since those times, Jaime Molero? When you look at the surveys that continually show Arizona struggles to get out of the bottom 10 of states in their education spending.
Well, again, Bill, I think there's a couple of things to look at. One is we don't do a good job, especially in areas of high need, because Arizona's system of funding schools still, in large measure, is based on property tax. So school districts that have access to higher property wealth tend to have a lot more resources, and they can do above and beyond what the state formula pays for. But that's still part of the state funding system. A lot of, unfortunately, schools in the South Tucson or South Phoenix areas, or even where I grew up in Nogales, you still have a disparity in funding. And that, to me, should have been or should be the thing that we need to look at. But we also look at academic gains. We've done a phenomenal job as a state in academic gains. I would argue that we would be better served if we looked at investments and the kinds of things that can give us that high return on investment, more math teachers, more science teachers, better paid to attract them into these underserved areas. Dealing with special education populations that again, if districts don't have the wealth, they just can't deal with it equitably. So I think there's a lot of things we can do, but to put in place something that would be a job killer and have zero accountability, it just doesn't make any sense.
Wouldn't this money be guaranteed to go into the classroom?
No. So the way they structure this is that 50% would go to either existing teachers or hire new teachers. And then they have a hodgepodge of other types of funds where it would go to. Certified staff, classified staff would also have up to 25%. It says that career training would be included at 12%, but there's no requirement that it would go there. There's no restrictions that this money would go for any kind of administrative funding like we did in Prop 301. We actually had language saying not a dime would go to administration or administrative overhead. It would have to go to classroom funding. This doesn't have any of that. So that's my point, Bill. I just think that if you're going to do this kind of a tax structure that hits small businesses, I think people in Arizona's organizations that are going to be funding this should have some guarantees as to where the money's going and how effective it's going to be used.
Did Red for Ed set the stage for this, Jaime Molero?
I think it did. I think, but if you look at, I'm a big believer in following the money, and if you look at how this is being funded, a lot of these dollars, I would say at least more than 95% of the money is coming from outside of Arizona. Stanford Children, which is an organization out of Portland, Oregon, have been writing massive amount of checks to it. And so I'm not so sure it's really about education and education attainment and education quality as it is to getting out the vote. You know, 2020 is an important election year in a lot of different races. And I'm not so sure this really goes to the heart of what we need to be doing. If it was, I'd have a lot more confidence that this was about student achievement. Had all these business groups that, if you look at noprop208az.com, all of those business groups on Who's With Us, they wouldn't be there if they were included at the beginning of this and being a part of the discussion.
All right, give us the website there again, and we're going to let you go, Jaime Molero.
It's noprop208az.com.
Thank you very much. Good to speak with you again.
Thank you, sir. It's always a pleasure.
That's Jaime Molero, former state school superintendent, and his years were 2001 to 2003 when he headed up public education in the state of Arizona. Now he is speaking out against Proposition 208. All of our interviews pertaining to candidates' propositions are being archived, so it's very simple for our listeners, very easy. Go to kvoi.com. We've got them all archived there from our 3 daily local talk shows, simple to use. All the interviews are there for you. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. The Buckmaster Show live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Shelley Fishman is coming up next, and Shelley's with me in studio, and he says, he's kind of given me not really the thumbs up or down, just sort of up and down, but really kind of in a, what we might say, a flat range. We'll be back with Shell right after this.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com. A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is in the process of developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan and soon will consider which projects best address transportation needs across the greater Tucson region. As part of its ongoing public outreach, the RTA invites your early input on which projects meet regional goals. Learn more about plan development and provide input at rtanext.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's welcome now Shelley Fishman. Shelley, how's the week going?
So far, the week's going pretty well. We had a really good day on the markets yesterday, probably inspired by hope that the Congress would send a stimulus bill to the president for his signature. This morning, that hope was kind of dashed And the markets were down significantly, but they're moving back in the right direction right now. And I'm calling it flat so far on the day.
The House did pass a stimulus bill.
No, I'm sorry. I think
they
misspoke
not.
There.
Okay.
The House revealed its $2.3 trillion offer yesterday.
And intention.
And an intention to pass it today.
Gotcha. And so that has not happened. But what is going to happen, of course, is the debate tonight, the first of the three debates.
Well, that's
how close,
a very different subject.
Yeah. I wonder how the Wall Street and the financial markets are, what they would consider, who wins. Is that going to mean a bump one way or the other?
So in fact, there was an article in the Washington Post today by Jared Bernstein in which he is analyzing some Moody's Analytics analysis of what the Biden economic plan, as posted on his website and as he's talked about, versus the Trump plan, which is unfortunately not very clear. The only thing specific Trump has really talked about doing in his second term is eliminating the capital gains tax, which is, you know, a giveaway to the rich people. So what Moody's tried to do is say, well, what would happen if we go along the same road that Trump has gone for the last couple of years? And in opposition to that, what would happen with Biden's plan? And they've come to the conclusion that unless Trump were to change things, the Biden plan would outperform the Trump plan by a measure of jobs gained and GDP growth that's realized. The problem with all of this analysis, of course, is that the pandemic just makes the whole thing so difficult to see through with any kind of transparency.
And that really has affected the demand side of the economy.
Well, that's
right. And
making
it very hard to predict.
Yeah, and again, the demand side of the economy is 70% of our economy. Mm-hmm. You know, consumers make up 70% or approximately 70% of our gross national product. So when consumer demand is down, then it slows the economy, in a very significant way. So what we've done over the past almost 20 years, Bill, is used the government stimulus to augment consumer spending in order to generate growth in the economy. Now, that stimulus comes in kind of two flavors. One is low interest rates. When interest rates are very, very low, as they have been for, close to 20 years now, then what that does is it says to businesses, especially small businesses, that you can borrow at very low interest rates in order to grow your business. It says to individuals that you can borrow either through mortgages or other kinds of loans to finance your spending. And so one way the government stimulates the economy using the Fed to regulate interest rates is that way. And for the past generation, the Fed has done that because it has assumed that consumer spending won't, on its own, be enough to keep the economy at a growth rate that it considers to be acceptable and healthy. The other way the government does it is by spending more than it taxes. So we've had, since the Great Recession, we've had deficits that have, been in the range between $500 billion and $1 trillion. Every year. And that has kept our total debt as a percentage of total GDP at around 85 or 90% of where our GDP is. So if we've got, again, I'm going to round these numbers. If we've got a $20 trillion GDP every year, we've got about or had about 18 a little bit north of that, in total debt. Well, that changed, big time in the Trump years after the tax cut. All of a sudden, we started seeing not $400 or $500 billion deficits. Now we've seen $1 trillion deficits until this year, and with the pandemic, we've now moved that that deficit to somewhere in the area of $3 trillion or $4 trillion. And if the House passes and the Senate confirms another stimulus package, we could be at $4 or $5 trillion deficit for this year and into next year. That's a huge amount of money. You and I have discussed modern monetary theory about
right.
whether or not, you know, that's important or not. But what it says is the government's printing money, and it's using that money to do one thing, basically, which is stimulate spending. The economy is dependent right now on that kind of stimulus in order to continue to grow and to get out of this mess we're in right now because of the pandemic. And that's why I think the markets have been reacting so with so much volatility to, you know, the hope that we're going to get it done. Oh, no, Mnuchin and, you know, and the Democrats aren't talking. Oh, yeah, they are talking. So the markets go up. Mm-hmm. No, they're not. And the markets mm-hmm. go down. So that volatility is very much a reflection of what the markets consider to be important in terms of the stimulus that the government is willing and able to put into the economy.
And we're running out of time before the election. We've got a stimulus. If the stimulus is coming, we've got, what is Election Day's 5 weeks from today?
Right. And we've got certain things in the economy that are going to happen at the end of this month. For instance, the airlines are going to lay off a ton of people.
That's right.
Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Unless there's, you know, some large amount of stimulus in this package and it's passed and signed by the president. So we've got, you know, the problems that we've spoken about, income inequality. Income inequality creates a lack of demand. I mean, it creates a lot of other garbage, but mm-hmm. but one of the things it does in a macroeconomic sense is creates a lack of demand that has to be filled by the government. We have healthcare costs, which creates tremendous uncertainty. The Supreme Court is going to get the recommendation from the Texas District Court, Appeals Court, rather, that basically says that Obamacare should be considered unconstitutional and eliminated. That's going to take, here estimates, between 12 and 20 million people. It's going to remove their health care and put us back in a situation where people with pre-existing conditions, and by the way, now COVID is a pre-existing condition, won't be able to get or will only be able to get health care at a very, very high rate. So that uncertainty is also creating, among people who may be affected, an unwillingness to spend. And there you go. So now we have uncertainty that is slowing the economic recovery. We have global climate change. Global climate change is on display this year like it's never been before. California is burning.
Yeah, it's been a bad year.
The Gulf Coast is flooding.
Yep.
And we're throwing tens of billions of dollars a year at the effect of climate change rather than at the cause. So what we're doing is we're trying to repair stuff, put it back together, and that doesn't have any effect, any snowballing effect. In other words, when something is there and then it's gone because it's burned down or it's flooded, and you just replace it, the only effect you get in the economy is the exact money you spent to replace it. You don't get any snowballing effect of what that good does to make things better in a continuing way. So that's in effect wasted money that you wish you didn't have to spend. And now we've got something else that is being studied some of the macro economists called systemic racism. Systemic racism is something, I mean, we see its effect in the cities and we see it politically, but we now believe that the effect of systemic racism over the past 20 years has amounted to $16 trillion.
Yeah, I saw that estimate from Citigroup. I was just amazed.
Never seen that before.
I've never seen a number put on that.
I haven't read the primary document that
races.
Yeah. That gets to the numbers, so I can't really comment on it. But it's the first time I've seen fairly large number attributed to that economic effect, and that is scary as heck.
Hmm. Wonder how they came up with that.
I'm going to research it. I mean, it's just
and again, folks, we're not talking million or billion. They said the impact on the economy is 16
trillion
with a T since 2000. So,
so just my message today is the government needs to do something because everything is dependent on government's stimulus continuing. In order, number one, to climb out of the hole we're in, but also to sustain the economy with the problems that we're facing.
All right. Shelley Fishman, always a pleasure. People can find out more about Shelley if you'd like to contact him. There is a link on my website, buckmastershow.com. Shelley, we'll be all watching tonight to see what happens with the debate. Have a great day. Have a great week. Thank you very
much.
You too.
You too, Bill. Thanks.
Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Tuesday edition. This portion presented by Green Things, and we are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. People tell me all the time, I had a great experience at Green Things. Well, you're going to get a good experience because, first of all, you're going to go in and say, well, what kind of color can I put in the garden that would kind of cheer things up as we get into the autumn season? And you will get an answer, and you'll get it from experts. They have such a knowledgeable staff. 13-acre site, not only home to Green Things and all their warehouses full of beautiful green things, but Zocalo Village, all their shops there. It's really five shops in what they call Zocalo Village, and it is loaded with great merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the Live Line to our friend Anthony Gimeno, who is the co-founder of the local blog AllSportsTucson.com. Anthony has been writing about University of Arizona athletics for a long time. He covered the football beat for the Arizona Daily Star and the Tucson Citizen. He's senior editor of Lindy's Football Annuals, and he's the co-author of a book that still is selling very well about Arizona basketball, 100 Things Arizona Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. Anthony, how are you?
I'm doing good, Bill. How about you?
Doing well. This whole thing with the non-fan or live fans in the stand experience, I find fascinating. And piping in crowd noise, I can't get used to that part of it. Some of your thoughts on the weird year of 2020 from a fan perspective.
Well, if you don't like the empty stadiums, then you're not going to like Pac-12 football this year, because they are going to play, as you know, but they're not going to have fans' butts in the seats. There'll be none of those. Maybe for, you know, you can still hold on to a little hope for basketball, because the season will start, and the Pac-12 and the NCAA at large have kind of set November 25th as a start for college basketball, which is a few weeks later than normal. The Pac-12 will probably have a chance to revisit that in January. So I think for men's and women's basketball at Arizona, if there are home games in December or late November, we're not going to see fans. Nobody's going to be allowed in. But maybe later in the year, or maybe in January. And that's also going to be really important for local fans, because that will also affect, how many or if people can go to Arizona softball games, for example. And they're going to have a fantastic team this year. And people in our community love to go out to High Corbett and watch the baseball team. And they're going to be a really interesting team this year, too, young but talented. So, you know, hopefully when the calendar turns and fingers crossed, 2021 is a little better to all of us. Maybe we'll be able to see some fans in the stands.
You know, Kevin Sumlin, the Arizona head football coach, started his tenure at Arizona in 2018. So he had the 18 season, the 19 season, not real successful. He was one of those coaches, Anthony Gimeno, before all this craziness began, that would have been considered on the hot seat for his 2020 mm-hmm. season. Does he get a bye? I mean, in that kind of gets a pass here, Arizona's football program is not expected to do very well in this upcoming abbreviated season. In fact, some say they may not win a game. Does he get kind of a bye here?
I think he does, and I think you'll see that across the country because, I mean, it could be one of the very briefest of coaching carousels we've seen in college football, because the nature of the landscape of the world is that it doesn't play well right now to fire a head coach, pay him several million dollars of severance when everybody is going to be running into a financial shortfall because of COVID. And although some of these teams and leagues are recouping money by playing at least most of a football season, there's still going to be a lot of losses. There's already been a ton of cutbacks across the country when in terms of personnel, reduced salaries, eliminating sports. I just don't think it's going to play very well when you kind of have to fire a coach when he has a couple of years, 2 or 3 years left on his contract. And, you know, probably in the general scheme of things, given how crazy everything has been, you know, how much do you hold the head coach responsible for that right now? So, yeah, I don't really expect, you know, Arizona, if everything goes off as planned, will play 7 games. You know, there's a few winnable games in there, but I think the U of A has to stand by Kevin Sumlin and see what he can do. The recruiting class is seems to be a little bit better cut than the first couple. So there's some progress there. But I tell you, Bill, I think you probably didn't see it. The news this morning was not good. Their starting left tackle has decided to transfer.
Oh, boy.
And they've already lost their starting right tackle, who was suspended over the summer. And their two best linebackers also, when the Pac-12 originally said that they weren't going to play this season, you know, that helped hasten the transfer of a couple of their senior 3-year starter linebackers. So you're probably right in saying this is not going to be a super successful season, but the first few weeks of the college season has been wildly unpredictable. So
yes, indeed.
If you're prone to a little bit of hope, I guess you can hang your hat on that one.
And finally, Anthony Gimeno, the whole gravy train of college athletics coming to a halt here. You have athletic departments, really some of the big departments, University of Nebraska, Ohio State, laying off people in their athletic departments, the University of Arizona also. How is this, what are the long-term repercussions of this, Anthony Gimeno?
It's a little more short-term right now, assuming that they can get most of this season off. And there's no guarantee of that. There are leagues elsewhere around the country that are trying to play, say, 8 games in 8 weeks or 9 games in 10 weeks. That's not all going to happen. Just last week, there were 6 games that had been scheduled that were postponed because of COVID and outbreaks on particular teams. There will be a saving grace if they can get the college basketball season off, because the big pot of money at the end of that rainbow is playing the NCAA tournament, which they weren't able to do last year. So I think they can. There's probably means in which universities can get a little slimmer, maybe dip into some savings, take out some loans, and survive. But I think a lot of that's predicated on having this abbreviated season go off, getting to the playoffs, college football playoffs, having a national championship game, and reaping all that TV money, even though a lot of schools are missing out on a ton of financial resources by not having fans in the stands. Or in some cases, you know, there's teams across the country playing at 25% capacity. So, for example, like the Florida played last week. They played on the road at Ole Miss. Ole Miss has 16,000. Normally, they'd have 64. So, you know, that's a pretty big financial haircut on days like that. And it really hurts the communities.
I would take the noise, though, of 16,000 fans over the canned noise of the networks trying. They've got several audio people trying to, you know, hit that right moment when they should crank it up. But it's silly.
It has created one new job. It's that one guy
yes.
that got either the slider or the dial
exactly.
to just at the right moment to, you know, the running back's turning the corner. You got to turn up the crowd noise just a little bit.
I know. It's crazy. All right, Anthony Jimeno, thank you very much. Always good to have you on our program. Appreciate it.
All right, Bill. Take care.
Anthony Jimeno, who is the senior editor of Lindy's College Annuals, a national magazine about the college football scene. And for the local scene, he is doing a real good job with the local blog, which is called AllSportsTucson.com. The Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our monthly Tucson Tourism Report with Visit Tucson's Dan Gibson is coming up next.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock-full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for the draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. The Buckmaster Show comes to you. The live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Also, we have support, and we are so thankful we do, from Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. And my friends over there are keeping their fingers crossed that the Land of Enchantment will soon be opening to out-of-state visitors. But there's nothing that would stop you from, and we hope you do it right now, or within the next day or two, take a look at their website, southwestnewmexico.org. I think you will be impressed with the number, the quantity of things to do and places to stay. It's just a 3-hour drive over to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. It's time for our monthly Tucson Tourism Report with Visit Tucson's Dan Gibson. Dan, how are you?
I am all right. How are you?
Doing well. I had a note here that well-known Tucson restaurant operator Ray Flores is now the National Restaurant Association Chamber Advisory Committee member, and he would love the word to get out that this new stimulus program, the revised version of the HEROES Act, which is a $2.2 trillion corona relief package, includes $120 billion in grants to restaurants, bars, and food trucks. And he would love for us to get the word out, which we just did, that this is really important because the restaurant community, Dan Gibson, needs our support.
No, it's absolutely true. I mean, it's obviously a challenging business, and it's one that hit especially hard, by the pandemic. And you know, I think anybody who's ever worked in a restaurant realizes how thin the margins are in that business. It is not something where you're selling a product and then marking it up, a dozen times or whatever. It's a tough business to be in any given day. And the challenges that COVID had provided are devastating this industry. And, you know, if they don't get help, the landscape of the things we really enjoy about Tucson in particular, you know, across the country, these places aren't going to survive. And the first round of CARES Act funding had or PPP, you saw a lot of these gigantic restaurant chains able to take advantage of it, but other smaller places just didn't have those opportunities. So one super encouraging thing about this round of CARES Act funding and the help for restaurants is that priority would go to restaurants that are owned and operated by people of color, which is another disadvantaged community. So if it gets through the Senate, which would be a delight and possibly a tiny bit of a surprise as is, then it's all heading the right direction.
And Ray's title, just to get that correct, it's the Tucson Chambers Restaurant Advisory Committee. He's the incoming chair there, not the National Restaurant Association, but I'm sure
I'm still impressed by it.
Yeah, I mean, it would still be very it's still very impressive, even though it's not part of the National Restaurant Association, but I am sure that the NRA would be happy to have Mr. Flores' input.
Yeah, we should run a campaign. I think let's just get him on there. Let's just figure that out.
How are the restaurants doing? That we're hearing more and more kind of gradual reopenings, kind of rethinking of the way business is done. What are you hearing?
It's interesting because you're seeing a real batch of these restaurants opening up this week. Actually, a lot. There's a number of them. Hub downtown. Club or Hotel Congress is reopening, so Cup Cafe is opening on the 1st as well. So you're seeing, I don't know exactly what it is about October 1st, but I think it's sort of a combination of the summer coming to a close here, plus sort of being able to feel safe and have those protections in place. But you're seeing a lot of restaurants are jumping back in the game right now. I walked by the little one on my way into work today, and they had people sitting outside, right? Because the city and the county have allowed for a little bit more ability to have outdoor seating. And so it's progress. We have the Visit Tucson sponsoring Smart Restaurant Week, which starts on the 2nd. So there's from the 2nd to the 11th, I think 30 plus restaurants right now participating. And so that's our attempt to sort of re-jumpstart all the really positive things that were happening in Tucson restaurants. So if people want to check that out, it's a nice opportunity to get some great food and support local restaurants at the same time, including Ray Flores's El Charo and Charo Vita and Charo Steak.
Where can we get more information on those particular restaurants?
SonoranRestaurantWeek.com. So yeah, Laura Reese from Storyteller PR runs the event, but we're the main sponsor and kind of part of the catalyst to the whole thing. But there's a lot of really great. We might eat at Tito and Pep 5 days that week. If you don't, feels so good. I'm just like, holy cow! It's gonna be a whole new Dan. It's gonna be like one and a half of me by mid October.
We do have a couple of advantages right now. Arizona is looking pretty darn good. It's one of, I think, 10 or 11 states that actually has seen a sizable decrease in the number of cases of COVID. And we're getting into that season. We've had the endless summer, I call it, where it is going to start to cool down, maybe around 90 degrees in a week or two. This will be great for patio dining.
Yeah, I mean, it makes such a big difference, right? I mean, I think we're getting into the season of what everyone loves about this area. I personally am a big fan of the summer, but I understand. you know, it's certainly a lot more palatable. Like, you know, you can start going hiking significantly later, and there's all these opportunities to eat outside, and Tucson's really great about that. I'm really excited about, you know, like, Hotel Congress opening back up, not just Cup Cafe, but the whole thing. It's like, it really is an opportunity to be back outside and enjoy sort of the best of Tucson. And I think you're seeing that reaction. Like, we're definitely seeing an uptick in interest, like more people coming to our website. And then in what I do in particular in the PR sense, you know, we hadn't hosted a journalist since early March. And now we have four coming in October. So, I mean, I think there is a little bit of a tipping point that people are starting to get back engaged with the idea of travel.
We brought this up a month ago in our Tucson Tourism Report with you, Dan Gibson, about when is the right time, or as you point out, maybe a tipping point when organizations like Visit Tucson and your counterparts around the country can start advertising and saying, you know, the time is right to return. We'd love to have you. That's a big, big question.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you want to be sensitive to it. I think, thankfully, there's sort of big power players in this industry. They're doing a lot of that research. U.S. Travel, Destinations International, so one of the trade groups of American tourism, are looking at, you know, how do you measure when the right time to make that, to change the message, to sort of amplify the message. For us right now, it still is very much like drive market focus. That doesn't mean that there aren't going to be people that come in via flights, but that making that ask is still really hard, right? Like, that's sort of the point that seems a little bit tough for people to get their head around. And if you talk to sort of average people around, they're like, oh, I'm not comfortable flying yet. You know, that's been the consensus that I've seen. That so we're still talking about, you know, the Los Angeles, San Diego, you know, Denver, Albuquerque, Phoenix in particular, and really focusing on those markets and just saying, hey, listen, you can have this great experience. You don't have to put yourself out there that much. And you know, you can get away. There's still these opportunities to get away and experience something. And Tucson's really well positioned in that way of, you know, there being a lot of open space. Like you mentioned, there's, you know, outside dining at most places, really. And it sort of all comes together in a really positive way. So it's going to be this wide open spaces idea for us for a while. I mean, well into 2021. And then I think, I don't know when we start sort of marketing to fly markets, as, you know, as we'd say, but I think hopefully that's, you know, before the end of the year, is that starts to change. I think maybe that really you'll start seeing that happen when what would normally be our high season kicks in. I think my guess is that we start talking more about fly markets in January. Because it makes sense, right? That's when those cities are the coldest and people are really sick of being in Chicago or, you know, Minneapolis or stuff
right.
like that.
They'll be ready for a change. All right, Dan Gibson, always a pleasure. Thank you, Dan, for the work you're doing at Visit Tucson. Thanks.
Thank you.
Dan Gibson with us on the Buckmaster Show, and that will do it for the Buckmaster Show, our Tuesday edition. Thanks to John Couch, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Again, our thanks to Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management for presenting our live line. Have a great afternoon, everybody.